well organized. Not crazy muties for sure, Ryan. Precise, like well-drilled sect men.
Oh.
Ryan? Ryan! Shit.
The armorer was the last one to pass out. He didn't last long enough to see the door open. When JB opened his eyes again, he found that he was staring at the ceiling of a dorm.
Where am I?
Hauling himself onto the edge of the bed, he could see that all six of his companions were laid out on the beds as well. It was one of the smaller sleepers in a redoubt, usually accommodating only four beds. Even with the extra three beds, there was still room to move around and stretch aching muscles. Outside the closed door, he could hear distant activity. A large number of people must have inhabited the redoubt. Figuring it a certainty that they were heavily guarded on the outside, the armorer looked around for a set camera like the one Jack had spotted above the chamber door. The dorms didn't usually have them, but then this was obviously no ordinary redoubt.
There you are, you bastard.
The set camera was above the door, pivoting on a bracket and covering the entire room in a sweep. The only blind spot would be right up against the door, which was next to useless. Its steadily flashing red light showed that somebody was watching them. A quick search of his pockets while he gained his equilibrium on the edge of the bed showed JB that his pockets had been stripped of all ammunition, and that his knife had also been taken.
Shit.
That his blasters would have been taken from him, he had assumed as a matter of course. He stood and found that his muscles were sluggish, and that his arms and legs felt as though all the tendons had been sliced through. Pain lanced through them, and they failed to respond immediately.
Damn.
His first tentative steps were toward Mildred. She was still out cold, as he could see when he thumbed back her eyelid to reveal the eyeball rolled up in the socket.
She is out.
Moving with increasing ease and speed among the rest of the party, JB could see they were all still unconscious. Jack's coat and knives had been taken from him, as had Ryan, Sig Sauer, and Panga. Both Dean and Doc had also lost their blasters. But surprisingly, they'd neglected to take Doc's sword stick from him.
Ha!
The dark ebony cane with the silver lion's head looked like a walking stick from pre-dark days, and perhaps their captors had assumed it was an aid to the old man. He had already seen that Ryan still had his scarf wound around his neck. It was heavily weighted at the ends, and was a deceptively useful stealth weapon. It, too, had the advantage of seeming innocuous. Two weapons left, then.
Your first mistake, you stupid bastards.
Suddenly feeling overcome with a wave of exhaustion, JB made his way back to his own bed, trying not to show surprise at the discovery of Doc's swordstick. He sat on the edge of his bed.
Oh, dark night. What was in that grin?
He figured that he had awakened first because he'd managed to avoid gulping as much of the gas as the others. Yet it still had this effect on him. How would the others feel when they began to come around? He took off his wire-rimmed spectacles and polished them with his kerchief. Their captors knew he was awake. They'd figured the others wouldn't be far behind. And they'd know that they wouldn't be in any condition for a fight. The only thing to do now was sit it out. By the armorer's wrist chron, it was just over 15 minutes before Ryan stirred.
Oh, feel like a nuke shit in a pox-riddled gaudy house.
Effects take a little while to wear off. Feels like you've had every tendon in your body severed and then soldered back together. Otherwise, it's not too bad.
Ryan forced a smile. A joke from JB was a rare thing, and could only mean that his old friend had the situation as assessed and secured as was humanly possible. Ryan's hand instinctively slipped down to his waist and leg, feeling for the panga, touching only the empty sheath.
They took everything. Only left Doc his walking stick. Camera.
Ryan took it in at a glance. He didn't know whether they could be heard as well as seen, but he wasn't taking any chances with pre-dark technology that was in the hands of people who obviously knew how to use it.
Oh.
Christy raised her head behind them.
Morning, Christy. Like that gas, Gren?
Gaia, this and a jump in the same day? It's no wonder I feel like a herd of muty pigs has trampled over every bone in my body. Ow.
Tell me about it, girl.
Jack had obviously taken in more of the gas, as it was some time before he recovered consciousness, during which time Dean had opened his eyes.
Oh, anyone know who did this? Tell me. I cheer with pleasure.
Only Doc remained unconscious. Mildred grabbed her backpack and went over to him. In addition to bits of cloth used as bandages, it usually contained medical supplies traded at Ville's or plundered from redoubts and ruined sites across Deathlands. The bag was now empty.
Shit. Whoever they are, they've taken everything.
Figured they would. Mostly.
Mildred felt Doc's pulse, which raced out of control.
Doc?
The old man was sweating and moaning, his REM, or rapid eye movement, making his eyelids twitch uncontrollably.
Damn these fools! What take our medical supplies?
Is he going to be okay? He doesn't look too good.
I wonder how much more he can take.
So do I. It's hard enough to figure out what's happened to his metabolism anyway, without the stresses of a mat trans jump and a nerve gas gren adding to it in such quick succession.
Mildred was still holding Doc's wrist when his slack hand suddenly made a grab for her arm, holding it tightly, with a strength belied by his skinny frame.
What?
His eyes opened wide, staring glassily into the light above her.
Emily, my dear, is it tea time already? I fear I am studying too hard, as I seem to fall into the arms of Morpheus far too quickly. So tired. Tell me, did you toast me a muffin, and is there honey for tea? I promise that I will take you and the children for a picnic when the weather improves enough.
Ryan turned slowly as the door opened. No need to turn quickly and make jumpy trigger fingers itch on their blasters. A man and a woman stood just inside the room. Both set guards held 9mm Heckler & Koch MP5K blasters, with the casual air of soldiers used to little opposition. Light grip, ready to brace and tighten on the trigger in an instant. They felt they didn't have to keep on the alert, as the blasters would take out the closely gathered group in front of them with ease. In Deathlands, you always kept on the alert, or got chilled. Mistake number two.
Is there any point in asking where you're taking us?
Shut up and walk.
Sarge Murphy reveled in having the upper hand. Ryan could see that it made him sloppy. The Heckler & Koch was pointing downward at an angle of about 60 degrees. It would take him precious fractions of a second to level it. The corridor was a typical redoubt corridor, long with a dull floor, and walls broken only by the installation of vanadium steel sectors. It was bizarre to see shuffling figures attending to maintenance tasks. One man was mopping the floor, another had the control panel off a sector and was staring blankly at the wires, as though trying to remember why he had taken it off in the first place.
John, is it me, or is this ridiculous? They call this an armed guard?
They're either triple stoop, or it's a trap of some kind. Problem is, Mildred, I can't figure out what kind of trap.
Oh, why? I'll go for the stoop option.
Hey, shut the fuck up, you black bitch! And you, Four Eyes!
Mildred's lips tightened, and JB could feel her body tense beside him.
Uh-oh.
Dean exchanged a shifting glance with Jack. Both were aware of Mildred's intense hatred of Stoops who picked on her color. Both knew it would be stored up for a future occasion, which came sooner than expected. Doc had been lagging behind.
Move it, old man!
He walked slower than the rest of the party, and Panner had gleefully jabbed him in the ribs with the barrel of her weapon, spurring him on. Looking over his shoulder, Ryan wasn't sure if the old man was planning something, or if the effects of the jump and the nerve gas gren still debilitated him. He tried to look at Christy to see if she could give him some indication, to see if she could sense something. There wasn't time. Doc was still shuffling.
Stoop bastard!
Penner shoved him again, harder this time.
I dare say, young lady.
Hearing her laugh, J.B. looked around at the same time as Ryan. Both men knew instinctively the doc was giving them an opportunity to move. He had timed his last shuffle until they passed the point where one of the maintenance men was washing the floor with an old, almost bald mop. Suds and water were gathered to one side of the corridor, and Doc contrived to stumble away from Panner and slip on the soapy water. He teetered.
Whoa!
Spinning on his heel so that he reversed position and faced the two sec personnel, Doc fell backward. Although it would seem that he was out of control, both JB and Ryan noted that the old man relaxed his muscles, spiraling to the concrete floor with a floppiness that protected him from breaking bones. He also knew exactly the way in which he would land. He contrived to get the lion's head walking stick on one side of his body, shielding it from the view of the sec corps.
What are we worried about, Sarge? These outsider scum are no danger. This old fucker can't even stay on his feet.
Even the otherwise taciturn Murphy stopped scowling long enough to crack a grin. Panner stepped forward, her Heckler & Koch blaster now lowered to the concrete floor, and idly prodded the prone doc with her combat boot.
Come on, get up before I kill you and mess the floor, you old fart!
With a speed that would seem surprising for his age, Doc flicked his right arm from the position over his body where he had been grasping the hilt of his stick. Instead of ebony, a rapier-thin double-edged blade of the finest Toledo steel whistled through the air, catching the light from overhead. It would have mesmerized Panner if she'd had the chance to see the light reflected. However, by the time this happened, she had already dropped her blaster and was clutching at the blood pumping from her torn throat. With the most delicate twist of his wrist, Doc had stroked back and forth, the blade ripping at the exposed area of flesh between Panner's chin and the beginning of her combat armored vest.
Manners maketh the man. I would venture to suggest that bad manners can be an undoing.
The blade had cut through her carotid artery, ripped tendon, fat, and muscle, and severed her jugular. It was a perfectly judged stroke, avoiding jarring the blade on bone and throwing the timing of the attack. Blood spilled from her mouth. It pumped over and between her fingers, spilling down her combat vest and covering the newly washed floor. It also splashed onto Doc, already climbing to his feet with a limber spring that was spurred on by an adrenaline rush.
God damn it.
Murphy dropped his own blaster. Panner was his second in command, his loyal lieutenant. She had the instincts of a killer, and yet an old man had chilled her in front of his eyes. Furthermore, he couldn't work out where the blade had come from. Before Murphy's blaster had a chance to settle onto the concrete, JB sprang for it, his forward momentum carrying him into a roll, which pulled up painfully short against the wall of the corridor. The armorer grunted as the blow knocked the air from his lungs, but regardless, he pulled himself into a sitting position. The Agent K was positioned in his hands, finger taut on the trigger, directed at Murphy's head. The armorer would have preferred a body shot, but knew it would be useless with a combat vest. At this range, it wouldn't stop a burst of fire fatally injuring the sec man, but it could slow his death enough for him to chill his opponent. JB's snap aim wasn't to be tested. Murphy had allowed his full attention to be directed toward the armorer, and hadn't noticed Ryan step forward just two paces. That was all it needed. The one-eyed man unfurled his scarf from around his neck, wrapping one end around his right hand. The weighted end swung down loosely, and with a snap of his wrist, he whipped the scarf, catching Murphy on his right temple. The sec man grunted and collapsed in a heap on the floor. Ryan retrieved Panner's discarded blaster, checked it, and had it in hand ready for use in one fluid motion. Without a closer check, Ryan couldn't tell if Murphy was still breathing. Certainly he was out cold, and for some time. There was an indent in the side of his skull, a depression that was already turning blue and weeping blood slowly. That only left any possible danger from the two maintenance men. Jack took the one nearer Doc, the one who had been cleaning the floor. The man had been looking blankly at the action unfolding in front of him, and didn't even notice Jack until the wiry albino had his hands around the man's throat. Then he slackly turned his head, his dull eyes staring into the youth's glowing red orbs with incomprehension of what was happening to him. Jack twisted, snapping the man's neck, and watching the light in his eyes slowly fade and extinguish. There was little change in the man's expression, as though he hadn't even taken in his own chilling. The maintenance man who had been working on the sector control panel was more of a problem, but not much. Just that bit detached from the action, being 10 feet in front of Mildred and JB, he watched with an uncomprehending horror at what was occurring. Like the comp tech Murphy had tried to talk to earlier in the day, the maintenance man was from a lower level in the colony, a level where muti blood and inbreeding had been more rife. Somewhere along the line, a sticky had entered his family tree, as evinced by the suckered pads that spread out where he should have had fingertips. It gave him a strong grip on the needle-thin screwdriver he was holding, a piece of sharp, strong metal that would have no problem penetrating bone as well as flesh. There was little intelligence in his brain, but a strong loyalty to the colony that had been passed down since the earliest days of Skydark. He was aware of Murphy and Panner's positions in the colony, and that he had to try to help them. The muti charged toward the group. Mildred, like the others, had her attention focused on Murphy and Panner, aware of the immediate danger from their blasters. She whirled, catching sight of the maintenance man out of the corner of her eye as she began to turn.
What the...
She threw her balance back on one heel, and his wild running thrust went past her. Completely off balance, the maintenance man flailed wildly toward Dean.
Fuck!
The boy was ready for the man when he arrived. Moving under the tall muti's body, which was bent forward at the waist by his momentum, Dean held his hand rigid and drove his fingers into the man's Adam's apple. A look of pain and shock crossed the muti maintenance man's face before his mouth dribbled a pale pink mixture of blood and spittle over sharp teeth that emphasized the sticky genes in him. It was followed a second later by a ribbon of bright blood. The suffocating man's momentum pulled Dean down to the floor with him.
Fuck! Fuck! Fuck!
Come on, son.
Ryan pulled the man back by his hair so that Dean could free himself.
Go now, yes?
We should.
With his newly acquired blaster, JB gestured to a winking sec camera.
They'll be onto us soon enough, and they'll be able to follow.
Then shoot out sec cameras.
Doc was on his feet, trying to brush himself off and avoid smearing Panner's blood on his clothes. He looked weary, as though the burst of activity had drained him of energy.
Then, if I may make a suggestion of some use, it would perhaps be best if we were to be moving on. Time to get those big wheels rolling.
Doc, you speak some god-awful claptrap sometimes, but just occasionally you come out with a gem of truth.